And welcome to this edition to the Inside Texas Football YouTube channel powered by InsideTexas.com. I'm Justin Wells, but more importantly, with us today is Dane Brugler, the NFL draft analyst from The Athletic. But before we get into 2024 NFL draft talk, please like our video and subscribe to the Inside Texas Football YouTube channel. We hit that 7,000 mark. Let's get to 8,000 subs. We sure do appreciate. And come see us at InsideTexas.com. If you use the code IT1, you get 2 months of Inside Texas for only a dollar, and that'll get you into the heart of recruiting, what we like to talk about in June for the official visits. But more importantly, let's talk about our man, Dane Brugler, okay? Thank you so much for joining us, Dane. This man is known as the author of The Beast. And for anybody that doesn't know, you have got to read this thing before, during, and after the draft. It is like the Bible of draft analyst stuff. It's loaded top to bottom. Dane has been all over it, man. What were your early thoughts and impressions after a long 3 days in Detroit?
Yeah, man, it's a marathon, you know. It's months and months of talking about what could happen, and then we have 3 days of reacting in the moment and then letting it just wash over us, and then, you know, trying to come up with, okay, what just happened and what does this mean for these teams moving forward? And it's always interesting when, you know, you have, certain circumstances that it's, you know, like Jonathan Brooks coming off an ACL. You got Adonai Mitchell with some question marks. You know, how does this all play out? Where do these guys ultimately go? And, you know, I'm sure we'll get into all these guys, but it was a good weekend for Texas. There's no doubt.
Yeah, second most draft picks, 11 on the weekend, only to Michigan, the national champion, who had 13. Dane, did you think 11 Longhorns were going to get picked? I think we had about 7, maybe 8. We were a little hesitant on a few guys. Did you have all 11 going in that first in that draft?
I thought it was going to come close to double digits, but I probably would have taken the under. If you told me it was 10.5, I probably would have taken the under. But yeah, that says a lot about the Texas program, the guys that they've recruited over the years. You know, obviously, we knew the top guys, the receivers, the running back, the tight end. You know, Christian Jones, like we knew those guys, but to see some of the guys go a little bit later was pretty cool for that program. And we know, you know, as I was working at my 2025 mock draft, just because I don't watch enough of these guys yet to really know. But what I do is I reach out to teams and scouts and say, all right, who do I need to be watching for next year? And quite a few Texas players came up. So even though they had a lot of draft picks, it doesn't seem like that cupboard's bare at all.
No, and we'll talk about it a little bit later in the show, but yeah, they look like they could have 7 or 8 guys going off the board in 2025. You've got a 2025 early mock draft. It's never too early. Go ahead and check that out at The Athletic under Dane Brugler. That story went up today. That's always a good read. Let's start with the first round. To me, probably the safest pick for the Horns was Byron Murphy. And it comes off to be, you know, one of the top defensive players off the board. Where were your thoughts on Murphy, where he landed, how much of he is a fit there, and him being that first guy off the board?
One of my favorite players in the draft. And I thought he went to a perfect spot. Seattle loved him. I mean, they were on pins and needles waiting to see if he'd fall to 16. And, you know, we know that that's a team that likes to trade down in the draft, and they didn't have a second round pick. So they would have liked to trade down. But once Murphy made it to them at 16, nope, not happening. We're going to take the guy because he was the top player on their board at that point. And, you know, it's a perfect fit because you think about Mike McDonald coming in, new head coach. You think about his defense and, you know, Justin Matabuke in Baltimore and how important it was to have that guy as a central figure of kind of making everything go. That's what Byron Murphy's going to be in Seattle. And it's what you loved about Byron Murphy's tape was you want to see him stop the run. Okay. And his ability to control the gap, make plays, happen consistently. And he did it as a 3 technique. He did it as a shaded nose. But he also has juice where he can shoot gaps and rush the quarterback as well. So you saw a little bit of everything. And is he maybe the ideal size of what you're looking for in a first round defensive tackle? No, not really. But it's not like he woke up one day and he was that size. You know, he's he understands how to use his body and leverage to maximize what he has. And so he plays underneath blocks consistently. His hands are so violent. Easy guy to kind of project and say, okay, this guy is going to be a player. And especially for Seattle, who I think they were like 31st last year in run defense. So he's a guy that they're going to rely on quickly to play a prominent role in what they're building on that side of the ball.
Murphy, for me, you know, I've got to cover a lot of these guys in recruiting. And so I get sort of close to some of them, you know, going through that process. And once I get to Texas with Murphy, the intangibles were kind of crazy. Okay. First, he told me he was born swole. He said, I came out the womb swole.
Yeah.
He probably was. Keiondre Coburn told me one time he's part human, part pit bull. I completely believe that if they did a DNA test. Also, this guy arrived in Austin as a true freshman with an associate's degree. He already had an associate's before he even got on campus. And if I read it correctly, he was one of the youngest players in the entire draft. And I believe 20 years old and 6 months. And so, yeah, that youth, all that combined. Seattle seems to have a penchant, too, for Texas defensive linemen. Marcus Tubbs, Puna Ford. I'm sure I'm missing a few other guys, but it seems like a great spot. I think you're spot on there. But that wasn't as exciting as the next one. Man, Kansas City, everyone and their brother knew Kansas City needed a receiver, wanted a receiver, was going after a receiver. They trade up a little bit with Buffalo, and they snag Xavier Worthy, who ran that 4.21 at the combine, the fastest in NFL history. What were kind of the thoughts and all the notes and everybody, the scuttle when Worthy fit, when everyone found out that Worthy was going to go to the back-to-back Super Bowl champs?
Yeah, I did a fantasy podcast earlier today, and they asked, okay, outside the top three, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze, you know, who's that next receiver who fantasy players should be watching as a guy that can have a breakout rookie year? And Xavier Worthy is the first, you know, name that came out of my mouth. And, you know, a big part of that is just opportunity. I mean, he's going to an offense with the best quarterback in the NFL. You know, who knows with the Rashee Rice situation, how that'll play out. They bring in Hollywood Brown, but, you know, I think that Worthy gives them a little bit more than even what Hollywood provides, because with Worthy, yeah, he has that vertical element, but he's actually probably a better underneath receiver because he has that suddenness in his routes where he can detach and uncover and create his own space. And, you know, he's not the biggest guy, but the flashes, if he can turn that into more consistency, you're hoping this is, you know, a DeSean Jackson type of player. So, yeah, it was – when you talk about fit, you talk about, you know, just guys that are going to good spots, Xavier Worthy's at the top of the list. So, yeah, I have my questions with him as a player, just in terms of, you know, with my report on him. But there's no doubt he went to a spot where he's going to be able to make an instant impact and an offense that is going to rely on him pretty quickly.
You know, 160 pounds, that's small. That's small. You're going to line up against some corners that are 30, 40 pounds heavier than you. And I think that's substantial. I talked to a couple people close to Mahomes in the Kansas City camp after the pick, and they said this is just Andy Reid being Andy Reid. They say he loves getting the trick guys, the gadget guys, to be able to manipulate the field and do different things. And so it just seemed like Worthy made a lot of sense in Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes obviously was happy. When you make the best player on the planet happy, I think that's a win. Hey, I'll tell you somebody else that's really happy, T'Vondre Sweat. That man went in the second round to the Tennessee Titans. And, you know, going into the draft, there were some weight issues. When you don't show your weight at the combine, that raises more flags than actual bad weight, in my opinion. And he had a few other things along to him. But if there was a more dominant defensive lineman in college football last year, I want to meet him because Sweat was just that guy. Tell me about his fit in Tennessee and kind of what you see in that one.
Yeah, the most surprised I was on draft weekend was when Michael Penix went 8th overall. The second most surprised I was when T'Vondre Sweat went top 40. He was a difficult guy to talk about pre-draft because you don't want to kill the kid, you know, but the weight issues are certainly a thing. This is I want to be fair to how NFL teams are talking to me about the player. And he was off a lot of boards because they didn't trust the weight. You know, why did it take until your last year to really break out and, you know, have this the emerge as being as dominant as you were. You know, Scott said he was, you know, close to 390 in the college football playoff game. Yeah, not weighing into the Senior Bowl. That's something that certainly stands out as, okay, well, there's a reason, obviously. And then, you know, obviously the DWI incident before 3 weeks before the draft, you know, that's, yeah. It's something that, you know, DWIs by itself are obviously terrible, but just the judgment to put yourself in that position 3 weeks before the biggest weekend of your life, that obviously is something that some teams are not going to be comfortable with. But obviously the Tennessee, they were. And this is a team that it's a little different. It's a newer regime. But this is a team that has not shied from taking chances in the past, in the first round, second round. And with Tavondre Sweat, there's no doubt about it. And he's in a draft, too, where if you needed a nose tackle, it was short supply. I mean, I think only two nose tackles, pure nose tackles, were drafted. McKinley Jackson from A&M being the other one. But so teams that needed that nose, that really wanted that guy, you had to, you know, understand, okay, there's flawed prospects on the board, but a guy that has a chance to be a dominant player if all things are working out. And so obviously the Titans felt comfortable with Tavondre Sweat. And that's something that time will tell as that we look back at this pick and say, okay, was the weight an issue for him throughout his NFL career? Anything off the field? Is that something that interfered with his on the field production? So, you know, it's a complicated player, but you're absolutely right. When he was on the field, man, he's dominant. Even though he was like 366 at the combine, he doesn't look overweight. Like, he carries that 366 very naturally, powerful at the point of attack. When he wants to be, he can be dominant. And so for his sake, you know, hopefully he, you know, sees the opportunity that he has in Tennessee and he runs with it.
When I met Tavondre at Huntsville High School, he was 235. And I don't think anyone, he came in with the Tom Herman regime. I don't think anyone expected him to get as big as he did, but man, better late than never, especially when he turned on that motivation in the last year. I know through spring practice last year, Texas had hell getting running plays off. Between him and Murphy, it just wasn't fair. Yeah. One of the reasons was the guy they were handing the ball to, and that's Jonathan Brooks. And not only is he the first running back off the board, it's the second year in a row Texas running back coach Tashard Choice has had a running back, the first running back off the board. It's also, he's had five running backs in the last two drafts, if you also count Jahmyr Gibbs in Detroit. I mean, Choice is insane. And here's the thing. He is recruiting at such a high clip. He rarely misses his guys. Tell me a little bit about Jonathan Brooks. Obviously, the ACL was a big issue, but it didn't seem like it was that big of an issue because, one, running backs don't generally go a lot of times in the first round anyway. They're kind of a second, third, fourth when you start seeing them come off the board. But man, when Brooks, I feel like that spot where he went, I think Carolina's is a place that he's going to get plenty of opportunities. There's not a lot great there right now, but they've got some young talent, and I think he's going to have that opportunity. What was your thoughts on Brooks and where he went?
Yeah, he went to a good spot with Miles Sanders, Chuba Hubbard, but those guys aren't going to stop Jonathan Brooks from seeing the field. And I think when you look at what they want to be on offense with Bryce Young going into year two, they're going to rely on that run game to help open things up in the passing game. They invested in the offensive line. So for Jonathan Brooks, this is going to be, I think, a situation where it's going to be a committee, but he has a chance to lead the committee. And you love the movements that he has. The momentum is always going. He can string together his moves really well. He's an instinctive player. You know, I think when you factor in the vision and the natural instincts, I think you see a guy that just has a knack for it. And what he can do as a pass catcher, I think, is going to play a big part as well. So, you know, on third downs, on passing downs, some of these, you know, he has really good ball skills. That's one thing that really showed on his film was his ability to adjust to the football, easily make the catch in stride, and then go make a play. So Jonathan Brooks, yeah, he was my number 48 overall player, and I think he went 46, so right around where I thought he would go. But yeah, and the next running back didn't come off the board for another 20 picks after him. So most teams had Jonathan Brooks as RB1 in this draft.
And you know, that's a guy that only really played He never really played a full season. He was always right behind Bijan and Rashawn, so he got a real good tutorial on how to be a pro's pro, how to be a running back. And then, you know, with that, he had enough of that season to where it showed enough. And, you know, and Brooks, a 3-star from Hallisville, probably had 5 total offers at the end of the day. Just a great story. Adonai Mitchell, that's a guy that slipped a little bit. You know, Sweat and Brooks went ahead of him. I think we kind of thought Mitchell might sneak into the end of the first round, possibly the beginning of the second. But it looks like he wound up at a great spot already, a place that really needs him. Adonai Mitchell to the Indianapolis Colts. What was your take on him?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you see, 6'2", 205, long, limber athlete. Remind me a lot of the late Chris Henry, all those years of the Bengals, and a guy that can go up and make a play. You don't see the ball hit the ground very often when he's targeted. I think he only had one drop the last 2 years in college. So he's very loose, but that's a good thing when you talk about him as an athlete. Not a great thing when you talk about him as a route runner. And so just being more disciplined and precise with his movements, not a big yak threat. The off the field stuff is more, there's nothing, criminal, obviously. There's nothing that I think teams were overly scared off. I think just, he gave a different vibe to different teams, and some teams were comfortable with that. Other teams weren't. And so it shouldn't be something that stops him from having a pro career, obviously. And like you said, he went to a good spot and it has a chance to develop a rapport with Anthony Richardson at the quarterback of the Colts. Michael Pittman as kind of that underneath threat, that's what he does best. They really need a guy that can stretch the field and can win down the field. And I think Adonai Mitchell it can be that guy. So he's a guy that can move the chains. He did it consistently in Texas, and I think he can do it consistently in the NFL. The Colts, I think they, when they look at it, I think they think they got a steal with Adonai Mitchell outside of the top 50 picks.
And I really like Chris Ballard, the general manager. He had some words for the media. And when that guy's – when your coach or GM are they're fighting for you, that – man, that's got to feel good. That's got to feel real good. And do you realize who the top wide receiver is in the class of 2026 nationally? Chris Henry Jr.
Yeah. Ohio State, right?
Committed to Ohio State. He was living in Ohio for forever. He actually transferred to modern day in Santa Ana, California, and joins that stockpile of 4 and 5 stars. Chris Henry Jr. is a dude. I feel like we're going to be talking about him in the next few years. He is outstanding. Another guy that kind of slipped, but I think kind of found the right spot as well, was Jatavion Sanders. He went in the 4th round, pick 101 to the Carolina Panthers. If you would have asked me after the Alabama game where Jatavion Sanders was getting picked, I would have said first, second round, probably late first, early second. I mean, in the biggest game, Sanders was huge. But overall, he still had a great season. He left as a record holder for tight ends at Texas. And so he joins Jonathan Brooks and the Carolina Panthers. So now maybe Bryce Young has a guy that he can throw it to. And don't forget, he was the number one rated athlete in the nation coming out of high school. He never played tight end. He was actually an edge defensive end type and played wide receiver, had 16 touchdowns as a senior. What are your thoughts on Sanders, him kind of falling a little bit, even though it probably was the right spot, and how he's going to fit in Carolina?
Yeah, I think it goes to show just how every team looks at these players differently. Jatavion Sanders was viewed as not a fit for some offenses and some schemes and what they wanted to do. But obviously the Panthers, they considered drafting him in a 3rd round, actually. And then they kind of had to, because I believe they took the linebacker from Kentucky, Trevon Wallace. And so they kind of had to make a decision. Hey, okay, who's more likely to fall to us with that early pick in the 4th? And they decided to go linebacker in the 3rd, and they got lucky that Sanders slipped through the crack and was there for them in the early 4th. But yeah, is he an amazing athlete as a tight end? No, I mean, he's a good athlete. He's solid. Size, solid. 6'4", 200, right around 250 pounds. But he ran in the 4.6s. He, like you said, he was a record holder for tight ends in Texas history, and he could be a true 3-level threat. He can win down the seam. He can work the middle of the field. My biggest thing with Jatavion Sanders was just, he needs to become more available as a pass catcher. And that's just making sure you are understanding, okay, what's the defense doing? I need to get my head turned around quicker. I need to get open maybe a little bit earlier for my quarterback, just helping out the pass catcher. So, and again, we're talking about him going to a situation in Carolina where there's bodies there, but no, there's not a true tight end one. And so I think as a rookie, I don't think it's going to be immediate for Jatavion Sanders, but year two, year three, I think he's definitely has a chance to be at the top of that depth chart. Remind me, you know, like a Gerald Everett, you know, one of those guys, a little bit undersized, but a good athlete and a guy that can, you know, help move the chains. He did it consistently in college. He can do it consistently in the NFL.
And he's a guy I called catcher mitt hands when I saw him as a sophomore in high school. He was purely offense as a sophomore.
Doesn't drop it, right? Doesn't drop it.
He didn't want to even talk about playing defense. That's how his mindset was. His hands, he never dropped the ball. Yeah. They were immaculate, and I think that's got to be a big thing. The next guy is one of the easiest ones to pull for. Had an incredible Senior Bowl, kind of cemented himself as not an undrafted free agent. This guy's going to get picked. Played soccer as a kid. We see that translating with his footwork, and that's Christian Jones. He went in the fifth round, the 162nd pick to the Arizona Cardinals. What are your thoughts on Christian Jones? And he's kind of reminds me of Tavondre Sweat. He got an extra year. He used that to slim down, to get motivated. He's always been good at the pass block. He's got to improve on the run block. It looks like he's doing both. What do you think about that pick?
Yeah, it looks the part, right? 6'5", 310 pounds, 35-inch arms. Tested pretty well in terms of the 40. And I think the biggest question with him was, some of the short area change of direction things like that. But he's controlled with his steps, moves well. I would say he's alert in pass pro. It's just, he can get a little stressed and bend at the waist. And that's where he gets a little bit off balance. That's where he just needs to be a little more consistent, and you see that in the run game as well. So, but I think you nailed it. The way having that extra year really showed the development year over year, getting better and better. And that's what you want to see from these young guys is, this is an area you need to get better. And clearly he worked at it. And so you like that he has experience at both left tackle and right tackle. So he brings you a little bit of versatility about where he's going to play. And I think he was drafted to be a swing tackle. I think ideally he is your third offensive tackle on the roster, a guy that can fill in at right tackle if needed, can fill in at left tackle if needed. And, you know, we'll see if he can maybe go from there and become a starter down the line. But to start, I think he's an ideal swing tackle.
Next up is Keelan Robinson. And Keelan's the reason I'm not an NFL draft analyst, because I didn't see Keelan Robinson getting drafted. And trust me, I saw what he did in Austin, not just at running back. I like to call him a gadget back, really, but not just at tailback, but on special teams. He was so valuable on both sides. And so Keelan Robinson goes in the fifth round to Jacksonville. He's going to be over there helping out, Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne. Hey, what do you think about Keelan? Did you expect Keelan to get drafted, one? And two, what do you think about the fit and what he's going to be able to do in the NFL?
I was surprised. I had him as a priority free agent. But I tell you what, the kick return rules, how that to me, that helped get a guy like Keelan Robinson drafted earlier than expected, because, you know, he had a 95-yard kick return touchdown this year. He has it's all about speed with him. Speed, yes. speed. And he shows it in a lot of different ways. But I think his value on special teams is why he went as early as he did, more so than what he did on offense. You know, I think once Jonathan Brooks went down, it was like, oh man, that's such a bummer. But hopefully that means we see more from Robinson. And we didn't really see that on offense. But again, special teams, that's where he was able to make his mark. And, you know, not complain about the lack of touches. I'm just going to go out there and make a difference when I can. So, you know what, I think as a third down back, maybe, because I think he can catch the ball pretty well. I was surprised he went as early as he did. But he's going to a situation where, he's going to have a chance to make an impact right away as a kick returner, and then whatever he gives you on offense is kind of a bonus.
And you know, I always get our man Joe Cook always getting with this joke. You know, Keelan Robinson's a rapper, K-Rob, and you know what? He's not bad. He actually has some music on iTunes. It's not bad. And now in Jacksonville, I think he's going to get a chance maybe to run with the Run DMC of Duval. I think he's going to get a shot, man. This guy might go platinum. I'm watching, Dane. I'm wishing. Next up is Jalen Ford. He's another fifth rounder. He went to the New Orleans Saints. Jalen Ford was probably the heart and soul of the defensive team in the last 2 years for Texas, especially after his real breakout junior year where he could have potentially left early and maybe even gotten drafted higher. It's unknown right now, but it feels like the Saints is a good spot, pretty close to home. I know his mom's really happy. What do you think about Jalen Ford and really the last 2 years he put together in Austin and how he's going to help New Orleans?
Yeah, there's definitely some buzz on him after the 2022 season. And then he goes back. And I think the big question was just what caliber of athlete is he? You know, he's a good athlete, but it's one thing to go up against Big 12 offenses. It's another thing to face NFL offenses. And did he have the athleticism to hold up? He was okay at the pro day. I think he ran a 4.71. You know, the three cone was fine. Like everything was okay as an athlete. And I think that average play speed is why he ended up going as late as he did. But, you know, he's an instinctive player. And so that helps him be in the right place at the right time. And I mean, it's no coincidence that he had over 100 tackles each of the last 2 years. You know, he's a guy that, you know, understands what the offense is trying to do. And then, you know, just a very alert player. And then he gets downhill and makes a play. So, yeah, I think that the play speed's not going to jump out. And that's something where if he takes a false step, he's in trouble, especially against NFL speed. But I think the way he sees the game and the way he can trigger, that's going to help him go or maybe get on the field. And then once he does, he might not give the job back because of how smart he is. And so at that point in the draft, yeah, I think that was a home run for the Saints.
Jalen Ford is an easy kid to root for. You know, his mother actually went to my high school, and she was a state champion in track. And so there's some genes there, definitely. Yeah. And so I'm happy for Jalen. Our X's and O's guru at Inside Texas, Ian Boyd, big Pittsburgh Steelers guy, loves the Steelers. I don't hold it against him. Ryan Watts lands there in the sixth round, 195th pick. Is Watts a safety? Or is he a corner in that system under Tomlin? How's that fit there? You know, Ryan Watts is a guy that played in Austin the last 2 years after transferring from Ohio State. He's a right. Texas kid, Little Elm. What do you think about that pick for the Steelers?
How big he is, 6'3", 210 pounds. To me, he's a safety. We'll have to see how the Steelers use him. You know, this is what training camp's for. You get him into camp and you kind of figure it out as you go. He's a freak show as an athlete. You just don't see guys that size moving the way he does, having some of the short area quickness that he has, the body control. He can make adjustments on the football really well. He's a long player. I mean, there are offensive tackles that are jealous of his arm length and his wingspan. It's crazy how big this guy is. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the Steelers, if they want to try to line him up man-to-man and just say, hey, just stay attached to this guy. Or are they going to say, here, go play in space where you keep everything in front of you. That way you can drive on the football. So regardless, I mean, his tape didn't necessarily scream draft pick. But when you have the traits and just the size and speed that he has, right, you're going to get drafted. So, yeah, it wasn't a surprise that he got picked. And at that point in the draft, you take a chance on a toolsy kid like this.
You know, at the end of the day, I think Texas fans were obviously ecstatic. 11 picks, 2 in the first, 3 receivers, tied in a running back, and, you know, just a conglomerate on that offense. But I don't know if there was a fan favorite that was more loved than Jordan Whittington. And that's another guy that I had as a priority undrafted free agent. I would have lost the bank if I would have bet he was getting drafted. The Rams said, you know what, we'll take him. I wonder if when Sean McVay came to the coaches clinic in Austin a few months ago and got to see those guys up close, I wonder if he heard any good things about Jordan Whittington out of the facility. I'm not sure. I've heard glowing remarks, but how surprised were you that he got drafted? Will he fit with the Rams? And is this a good little spot for him to niche, to make out, you know, a nice little NFL career?
Oh, yeah, I think so. No, there's no doubt about that. I'm a little surprised. I thought he was a borderline draft pick. Like, could have gone late, could have been a priority free agent. He was right on the edge. And, you know, not being able to work out before the draft because of that injury, that left hamstring that he was dealing with, that obviously played a part. And he's had so many injuries over the years. You know, it's tough because when he's healthy and out there, you see the impact that he makes. You know, he can line up across the formation. He can play. I mean, he worked a lot from the slot in that Sarkisian offense, but, you know, he worked outside. And, you know, he can go up and get the football. He has size. He is a physical guy. He's over 6 foot. He's over 205 pounds. And, you know, he could do something with the ball in his hands. I mean, he will make guys miss either with power or quickness. So I, as an athlete, as a football player, this guy has a chance. Just can he stay healthy? Yeah. That is the biggest thing. If he doesn't work out, it's probably because of health and durability. But yeah, he went to a good spot with the Rams, where you think about, okay, Cooper Kupp, he's the guy in the slot, no doubt about it. But Cooper Kupp hasn't been able to stay healthy. So if he goes down, could there be a chance for Jordan to get on the field and, you know, able to keep that spot warm for Cooper if he gets out? And then maybe life after Cooper, you never know. So, yeah, I think he went to a good spot with the Rams and that McVay offense where he's going to have a chance as long as he stays on the field.
Yeah, Jordan Whittington's so easy to pull for, knowing him from his Cuero days and that state championship his senior year. That game, I'll never forget when he broke Eric Dickerson's all-time state championship rushing record. And then he comes to Texas and plays receiver. And so that's the nature of the beast. That's all 11 right there. The big question I think Texas fans want to hear, you talk to a lot of these people behind the scenes, like hundreds and thousands of these people. Are teams paying more attention to Texas now? Obviously, with 11 guys getting drafted, that's significant. With 7 or 8 potential guys next year, that's significant. With increased recruiting classes and 2 quarterbacks by the name of Quinn Ewers and Arch Manning who should hear their name called when their time comes. Are teams paying more attention to Texas now? Is this the Sark effect that fans wanted to see and want to hear?
Anytime you know you're a playoff team, obviously you know coaching matters, but you're not making it to the playoffs without good players. You know, plain and simple, you need the talent, you need the personnel, and credit to the Texas coaches for developing. You know, we've talked about you know Byron Murphy, a perfect example, who he didn't come in as a 5-star. I mean, he was a late flip from Baylor, right? Yes. You know, it wasn't like everyone was trying to get this guy from an early age, but you know they were able to develop him, and they always knew he was a freak. But he waited his turn, and then this past year became a starter, and you know he was ready. And so the development that these coaches, because that's such a big part of this, you know we can recognize talent and just ability, but the coaching staff has to be able to develop these players to put them in a position to succeed. And obviously that showed up on the field with the win-loss record last year, and it translated to draft picks. So you know accumulating talent and then developing these guys, that's the recipe for success. We've seen Ohio State do it, Alabama do it, Georgia do it. Texas is able to do it this past year, both on the field success and with what we saw in the draft. And obviously, if you're a Longhorns fan, you're hoping that continues next year because there's some talent down there. And as they make that move to the SEC, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how this season plays out, especially with the quarterback situation.
Yeah, I think they're good hands at quarterback. I think Sark's got a beat on what those guys are doing. You know, it never ends. Dane, it never ends. The draft's over. Your job's done, except it's not.
Never.
Because now you got to plan for 2025. It's right. Never too early. And it's funny because you can get on Twitter on Sunday mornings and you'll just see links of not too early mock drafts. Yeah. Maybe it is a little too early, but not for Dane Brugler. You already put out a 2025 draft thing talking about some of the early guys to know for 2025 at The Athletic. Please check that out. Who do you think are like 3 guys at Texas fans need to pay attention to because the NFL is paying attention to for this next draft?
Yeah, I think it starts with Kelvin Banks at tackle. You know, this is a draft where there's a couple tackles at the top that are really talented. You know, Will Campbell at LSU. You know, there's a couple other ones, but Kelvin Banks is right up there, and he's a guy that. You know, the moment he showed up in Austin, he was kind of like the guy, right? I mean, he was someone that stood out immediately as being someone that had an NFL future. And, you know, you think about with that offense now, obviously it's going to look very different at receiver. It's going to look very different at running back. But that offensive line is going to have some continuity. And it starts with those tackles, especially Kelvin Banks. He's got a chance to go high. I mentioned Quinn Ewers. I mean, he is a polarizing player because the talent's not the question. It's just, okay, can he put it all together? We've seen improvement year over year. That's key. And coming back, I think, was a smart move for him. He's still just 21 years old. He's still a young, young player. And NFL teams love experience. He's going to, after this season, he'll have 25 plus starts. He'll have over 1,000 pass attempts. You know, it should be less projection for him because he'll have a ton of experience. So Quinn Ewers, what he's done in the past matters. He'll be drafted based off of what he does in 2023. That is what's going to determine if he's a top five pick, a second round pick, wherever he ends up getting drafted. It'll depend how he performs this year. And then, you know, I mentioned how, you know, Xavier Worthy, Adonai Mitchell, you know, we mentioned Jordan Whittington, those guys are gone. So what's going to happen at receiver? Isaiah Bond coming in from Alabama. He's a guy that, you know, because I don't know. I haven't scouted these guys a ton just yet, but I rely on scouts to kind of say, hey, who do I need to watch for next year? Isaiah Bond's a guy that came up multiple times as someone that really wasn't showcased enough in that Alabama offense, but going to that Sark offensive scheme with Quinn Ewers, that has a chance to be a really nice fit.
Yeah, you know, with Quinn Ewers, you've got, you know, there was six quarterbacks picked in what, the first 12 picks on Thursday night. That's a premium. And I think, like you said, coming back is big, but also not having to battle those six guys for a draft spot. Now you'll be battling Carson Beck and Shedeur Sanders and those guys. So I think you're right about all three of those guys. Dane, we sure do appreciate you coming and joining us. We really do appreciate the draft coverage. Please go to The Athletic and check out everything that Dane writes. Everything is top to bottom. He's relentless. That's why he's so good at what he does, and that's why we have so much fun, you know, getting to connect with him over the course of these years and getting to talk. And so, Dane, thank you so much for joining us. Fans, thank you so much for watching us on the Inside Texas Football YouTube channel. Please like and subscribe to the Inside Texas channel. Also, please come see us at InsideTexas.com, running a special IT1. Get you 2 months for $1. That'll get you into official visit season in June, and that's really when it's going to be kicking. But come see us earlier in May. We got a lot of stuff coming for May, so be sure and check us out. Again, check out Dane Brugler at the Athletic. Thank you, fans, for making us a part of your day, and thank you for being with us on the Inside Texas Football YouTube channel, powered by InsideTexas.com.